You're now listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, broadcasting from sunny Orange County, California. Filmmaker, journalist, and film historian, Paul Booth.
Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures with Paul Booth. I'm your host. We're going to be interviewing Sean Paul Piccinino, director of Lady Driver, which is currently available on Netflix. And I see we have our caller. Welcome, Sean.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, very, very welcome. It's going good. How about you? How's everything going with you?
Everything's going good. Very good. Just obviously busy promoting the movies that just released.
Right. And enjoying the science fiction movie we're living, but we'll stay away from that. People will see the day to know what we're talking about. Yeah. First of all, I said who was going to be on today, but I've never asked you the proper pronunciation of your last name. So can you let me know so the audience knows?
Yeah, you said it right. So that you got it. It's Piccinino. Okay. So it's Italian. Okay. So the double C's make a CH sound. So yeah, it's just a pitch or peach. You can say peach. A lot of people say peach. Piccinino. So yeah, that's Sean Paul Piccinino.
Well, hey, we're both Italian, and your middle name is my first name. So
that's a good thing. Good middle name, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, when you told me that the other day, I was just like, yeah, easy to remember. Just to give the audience a quick background, I met Sean. It was probably a decade ago at a film festival. Have to acknowledge this on air before we jump into Lady Driver, and we'll discuss some of Rogue, which is on Netflix. You guys can also check out our review that's on the main page and then also in recent posts. Sean and I have been, since the show started, we've been talking about doing this, and there was just never the right project or time. So I always have to acknowledge on air that we appreciate when a guest either A, says they're going to say they're going to come on and do after years, or B, say they're going to come on, and even if they happen to become to the 22 next levels on the ladder, they still come back. So we want to make sure you know that we're all grateful, Sean.
Of course. I always come on. I always love to come on. Never, we're just trying to wait for the right, for something to launch so that we can talk about it, you know? Obviously, I've worked on a bunch of stuff over the years, but this has felt like a good moment, a nice moment to finally get on here.
Perfect. Yeah, no. Oh, you know, great. I love that because Lady Driver, which is what we're going to discuss first, Sean, I had seen pictures, various things on his Facebook, and then all of a sudden it was out on Netflix, and Sean was announcing, so it was like a nice Monday morning wake up of like cool. And I'm always one that's like, I have that little like pocket where I'm like, oh yeah, that person says they'll be a guest. Sometimes I'm like, cool, I can watch their movie and hopefully they're going to still be a guest, even though I knew you would. So Lady Driver, my first question, which actually I can't stand when hosts read a synopsis when they have the creator on. So if you could quickly just tell us what Lady Driver is about before I start with my question.
Yeah, it's about this young woman, Ellie Lansing, it's her coming of age story. So she's a very charismatic, kick-ass, intelligent young woman who, she's very curious about her past and her biological father who passed away. Just so happened to pass away the very day she was born. So this is a coming of age, a journey to her past, reconnecting with her uncle, family member that was estranged from the family. And, along that journey, she discovers her father was a race car driver and her uncle was a race car driver. And she has a real knack with cars, just even working on engines and all that. But she just gets her license. So she's 16. And she goes to work with her uncle for the summer and convinces him against his better judgment to teach her how to drive the race cars, which of course then leads her to racing. And I don't want to spoil the ending, but maybe she does or does not become a race car champion. So that's the story in a nutshell. And Grace Van Dien, who plays Ellie Lansing, is just, in my opinion, she's a star. I have been championing her for a while now, and I think that she's just has this. I don't even know how to describe it. She just has this air about her that you just want to be around. You want to watch her on screen. And you know, she just happens to be the daughter of Casper Van Dien, who I have done some projects with, and it's probably why we're able to get him to do an awesome cameo in this, playing her father in flashbacks. You know, and the entire cast is so great. I mean, I love everybody involved. From, you know, you've got Sean Patrick Flannery, you've got Christina Moore, you've got David Gridley, they all of them, Matthew, who plays Myrtle. They're all so, so awesome. And John Ducey, who actually wrote the film and also plays the stepfather. So it's just such a wonderful experience. I loved working with everybody involved. The crew as well is always amazing. And Force Films and ESX Entertainment, Ali Afshar, all the brass, all the big bosses. They're so wonderful to work with. And I think that stuff translates and shows on screen when you have this kind of harmonious, creative energy flowing.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say, and I said it in the review. For those of you, if you haven't checked out the review, please check out the review before the film and the other reviews. You know, check out the Facebook page and the social media. This was, I could tell 100%. I mean, of course, because I've known you in various ways and over the years at festivals and stuff, but I knew. While watching it, I was like, I remember how you're so much about respecting your team, who you work with, not for, even though you're supposed to say they work for you. I can remember with the lackey always being nice. You know, your friends were there not to be like an episode of Entourage and, hey, look at us. But it was like that genuine. So I really like that, because what you're saying is exactly how I do the podcast. It's like, I have 10 producers. It might be have my name in the title, but it's not just me. So, like, you know, it takes a village. So given that you have this great team to work with and behind you, what for you as a person made you want to jump into this specific story?
This one was so easy for me. I mean, right away. Obviously I knew the team involved, so that was a no brainer, but the story itself, when it was originally pitched to me, it was tell me where to sign, because, number one, I always like, supporting strong female characters. Any of the scripts that I write or co-write, we always focus on having strong female characters, leads, all of that. It's very important to me. I grew up in a family. My mother is one of nine sisters, and with one brother. And, I was raised and grew up around strong, intelligent, powerful women. And I think there is, you know, a lack of representation of that in the industry. And now flash forward, I have two daughters of my own. So this story immediately spoke to me. And I really wanted to be a part of telling this story and getting this story out there and getting these characters out there. Obviously, it has strong male characters as well. It's not just strong female characters, but I love having that. I love having that balance. I love having different diversity in stories. I love all of that stuff. And I feel like there needs to be more of it. There needs to be more filmmakers championing that idea. And so I was just very, very happy. I knew my daughters specifically and my entire family would rally behind this kind of story. And I wasn't wrong. It's my daughter's favorite film that I've ever worked on, whether directing or not. They really love the movie. They've told all their friends and they're, you know, so excited that it's come out. And, you know, I knew it was a story and a character that they would really get behind. And, And so I was just, I was tickled to have the opportunity and didn't have to be convinced to do this one by any means.
Well, that's excellent. And thank you for bringing that up. I of course, until you mentioned it, I was not going to, I would never mention what children someone has, but that you mentioned you have daughters. I really liked it. And I agree. I've been off and we won't really get into the whole climate thing, et cetera, but the championing of strong female characters was, this always has been so foreign to me, because I was thinking the other day, and I'm pretty sure if we talked once and we're the same age, there was a point where, like, between 89 and 93, where if I named my five favorite films, three of them were directed by a woman, which was Big, A League of Their Own, Sleepless in Seattle. Gosh, actually, I'm more. Point Break, Captain Bigelow. Yeah. So when I was really coming into those formative years, I was not, obviously we have no idea that men were, you know, club, like I said, that's a side panel, we'll invite you back for any opinions, but when I looked at that, I had never really associated this. So like when you're saying strong female leads, championing films, I had always thought of it as like, I always felt like when I went through PA gigs and when I produced stuff, I was always like, God, I wish I met more girls that want to direct films and make films. And like, I'm irritated because I don't hear enough women that want to just ramble about Kurosawa, or they don't have some story that they're just dying to tell. And I didn't know. So when it was nothing new for me to be like, well, I like Penny Marshall more than most male directors. And I'm a guy who doesn't like labels. So I don't like having to say my Italian friend, Sean, who's from Chico, is why, you know, it's like we could on and on. Sometimes he has a beard. So I really like that you're doing that. And that's what I also like about it, too. The camera obviously loves her, obviously a great actress. So now that we've kind of seeing that, what I would love to know is, it wasn't a genre piece, but we know that the standard film goer might take it as a genre. So how do you kind of has a director sit down and go, okay, I kind of have something that could, like, are you ever conscious to be like, whoa, we're slipping into genre and we still need to make it personal? Like, I've always wondered how directors balance that. Does that question make sense?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I always thought that I wanted it to be, like I said, a story about her journey. And the racing is secondary, you know. And of course, I wanted to do a couple things with this. Like, number one is tell this story of this girl's journey, this young woman's journey. And then also kind of show the world of racing in a way, I don't know if it's a new way of telling it, but showing it in a way of like, this is important to people. It is, it's their way of life. Like, so honor and pay homage to, this sport that maybe is not, you know, it could be obscure to a lot of the audience, not knowing much about racing before watching it, but hopefully they'll learn a little bit about it after watching it. You know what I'm saying? Like that type of thing. And I didn't want it to be any kind of caricature or, you know, and I'm sure we didn't get everything correct about the racing. You know, it's very hard to do. Sometimes you have to make those stylistic choices. We wanted to honor the sport as well. That was also a goal of ours. And, you know, I don't picture it as just a sports category film. You know, maybe it falls into that in a Netflix thing, you know, like a sports drama or something like that. But, and I'm sure certain people will see it that way. But to me, it's really more about the relationships in the movies. It's about that journey. It's about her coming into her own and discovering her past and healing wounds for her extended family, you know. And really, she is the catalyst of all of that. She helps heal wounds that have been there for 16 years. And she bridges that between her uncle and her mother. And, you know, I think it's, I think that's the core of the story, but at the same time, you know, having some enjoyable racing and shedding some light on that whole, sport.
Well, I really liked that part. I I would not believe you if you said you didn't have some days of thunder influence based on her age, but we can leave
course,
that.
Yeah. Right, our camera angles were 100%. We studied that film and looked at it like how do we think they did that, and tried to break it down. And yeah, there was definitely influence there from a pure, you know, camera perspective on some of the close-ups inside the car and just outside the car and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, so those of you out there, because it's weird, Sean, I'm finding it weird lately when TCM shows a classic movie and it's like, no, that was when I was in high school. Then it's like, oh, I guess I did wait 23 years ago. And then, of course, guys like us watch films too young, right? So it's like we forget to add on that, well, oh, I, you know, for me, it's like watching Born on the 4th of July. Well, I wasn't supposed to see that at age 10. So to say that's a 30-year-old film is like, when you're 41, is like crazy. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. So people, please look up Days of Thunder. I mean, all due respect, it's only my opinion. I say it's one of the films Tom Cruise, when he was an actor and not a producing industry. Please check out that. Born on the 4th of July, Top Gun, Magnolia. Okay, so let's see. Here's something I'm interested in, because you're speaking of prep. We were talking about prep, studying some shots. Here's what I really, really like. Was in kind of, you know, trying not to watch, because you know how it is when we watch films, right? We're trying not to study, but then we're trying not to research. We're trying to turn off what we might know about Cruise, you know? So, but I'm of course watching, here's what I love. You, we call them toys, and that's not an insulting thing to people outside of the field. You just absolutely had such a sense of not overusing toys, or actually using them when they're needed, unlike people our age who just saw Boogie Nights and thought they all needed a crane shot. So what was it like to kind of jump into being like, okay, you know what, if I actually need a crane, I have a crane? Or like, was that something in terms of Lady Driver or even effects? Like how did that affect you as a director?
You know, it's interesting. So yeah, we always have a certain amount of tools or toys on the set to be able to utilize. Sometimes for budgetary reasons, you won't have certain things or, you know, there's always those kind of things. But I like being creative. I like, let's say I can't get a techno crane because we can't afford it, right? Because those are very expensive. I will try and work with the DP and come up with some alternative ways to accomplish the same look. You know, on a that we can do on the budget or whatever. We did make use of some drones in this film, especially when we're on the racetrack. Which, you know, I'm sure people will recognize the flyout, like flying straight over the cars as they're coming at us or following them down the track. And I actually piloted the drone on those shots, which was interesting because I have some background with that. But I feel like we got some really great shots with the drones. But what's interesting is that we also used the drone because it's 4K and all of that jazz. We were able to use it as a substitute for a couple of the crane shots in there. So we actually didn't have a crane ever on that shoot. I actually don't think we ever did have any kind of crane on that shoot. And I think it was done with drones, which is very interesting. That you can even do that nowadays. You know, the technology is
ridiculous. The fact that you mentioned that, I would have never thought of that. I feel like guys our age are kind of like, we studied film so everything could be digital. We always dreamt of sitting on a Chapman crane so that it can be drones. That surfer, you should have been here yesterday, right? So I'm kind of just like, when I hear about certain things, I'm like, but why would you not want to sit on a Chapman crane and do 12 takes and just pay for the expenses out of your pocket that it went over schedule, right? Like, so that's
I did get to use a crane on my World War II project, and that was really cool. Big old crane, and got to do all that fun stuff. But yeah, I don't think we were able to get it for some reason on this shoot. We had to do some big, there was like a big crane pull for the car wreck at the beginning, or I'm sorry, during the flash stop. So I think there was some budget stuff with that. Like that cost a lot of money to do to wire wrap a car and then, you know, pneumatically you rip it and pull it across the racetrack. So yeah, it's always that weird balance where you're like, okay, I want to do this. Do you want to just make that car flip digitally? No, I want to do it physically. Okay. Well, that's going to cost this. So, you know, that means you can't afford, you know, something else. So what's going to give in the budget? And it's always, to me, I love those challenges. I actually, get excited about that stuff and goes, okay, well, you're telling me I can't do this, but can I bring my drone and am I allowed to fly it on there, you know, and up on the track and all this, you know? Okay, well then maybe I'm going to experiment with this and I'm going to try that. So I'm somebody who's very much, I love mixing old and new technology. Number one, I just want to start off by saying that I love pushing that boundary, and I love it even more if somebody says, oh, you can't do that, or you shouldn't do that. That makes me dig in and want to, you know, do it even more to create something new, because or different, or, you know, create a look that maybe hasn't been done a million times. And so I welcome those challenges. Like an example is, now this particular movie, I'm trying to remember which lenses we used. I can't remember if they were, but on American Fighter, another movie I did, we mixed 1960s anamorphic lenses with like the newest amazing, you know, 8K camera. You know, everybody might go, why aren't you doing that? Why aren't you using the newest, greatest lenses or whatever? And I'm like, no, I wanted this look. I wanted to have the funkiness and the different, you know, textures that those lenses will create. And so, yeah, I always welcome that stuff. You know, we might use a drone to become a crane in one shot, and then we might do something else that's totally old school and creative in another shot that you wouldn't, you know, necessarily think of doing. Like they ratchet strapped me to the back of a utility vehicle, and we chased the cars down the track while I was operating the camera, a smaller camera, not the main camera, to try and get some of those shots, you know, because of my stunt background. I'm like, yeah, you know what? Strap me to the side of this vehicle, hang off the side, and I'm going to get the shot of the cars racing down the thing. You know what I mean? Which is very old school. You know, like I always think about George Lucas in American Graffiti, was ratchet strapped to the side of those cars, holding, by the way, a much heavier camera than I'm holding, a 35 millimeter, you know, beast of a camera. And he was, you know, hanging off the side of the car, ratchet strapped, to get those shots. I just always loved that image. Do you know that image I'm talking about? Have you seen that?
Oh yes, of
picture
course.
George,
of course.
This ratchet strapped. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes. That always,
and
that always
American Graffiti back. Yeah, making film, and again, only my opinion, I always have to say this, back when George Lucas made films without just clicking a button, totally yeah. Love American Graffiti. I debate so many people as to how can that possibly be better than, okay, it's not better than Empire Strikes Back, but he didn't direct Empire Strikes Back. Okay, never mind. We all know he controls everything, so it's director by. But anyway, the reality is, like, I don't care who it is. Like, I will debate anybody as to why the idea of having a camera and a crane. I guess it helps if you have Haskell Wexler as your DP, but and just actors is harder. Yep. And my buddy like does effects for Avengers and Divergent, and so I'm the first to be like, no, I don't knock effects people, because my film school roommate, like, you know, I know how they slave all day in one room and they don't even get to interact with, like, the way we have fun on set. So
right
yes, American Graffiti. So what I love about that is you mentioned your stunt background, and you mentioned something that perfectly was going to go into what my next question was. So with your prep, and you have all these things that you know, but then practicality of budget. I love, and this is something that obviously people who are watching it aren't going to know about you, but I would know that you've just been an actor in a film, or you've been a writer, producer, director, actor, or you've been just director. So do you feel in your prep, do you feel you're more of a, or no, on set, in execution, do you feel you're more of a jazz musician or a scientist that's going to go with the experiment and what works?
That's very interesting. I think it's I think it's a jazz playing scientist. I think it's definitely I have moments of both. You know, there's moments of stuff that's very technical. I would say things that involve like stunts and safety and stuff like that, or a very technical, you know, type of shot, I'm more of a scientist. When it comes to performances and the actors finding that freedom to make the choices that are real for them, I'm more of a jazz musician, and I'm constantly bending and flexing and just going with the flow to try and create the most real experiences we can, because I really do believe as a director, our job is to help the actors tell the truth, because if they lie, the audience knows, right? I mean, they have to believe in what they are portraying, or else it comes off false. And of course, I'm not successful 100% of the time, but that's what I strive for, at least. And I think, and I hope that I'm continually getting better and continuing to sharpen my tools and in turn, the performances and the actors that I work with, they get to shine even brighter. I think it is a combination of both. And I think probably because of my upbringing in the theater to my training in martial arts is probably how I'm able to be as flexible as I am and kind of change hats over as much as I can.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, because the hat changing thing, I'm always intrigued. Like, I have a dumb joke that's like, I've only directed shorts. It's like, if I was directing a short, like, I can't even be an extra in my own film. So it's like, when I am just astounded when I see these, not when it's from necessity, you know, in a great way. You know, we have a number of guests who they've sent a film and it's like, okay, we know that they're actors, you know, the deal, you write yourself a good part, or you're maybe sometimes you take that role to save budget. But when it's literally when they're past that and they can actually have someone else and they want to go out and do that, I've only produced features, and I thought that was enough of a headache. I could not imagine had I had any other duties than being the producer. Now, of course, you had a stunt background and this was a film that called for it. So I'm always, and the wearing different hats that we're discussing, I'm always wondering, is it real easy, aside from everything to each their own, but for you personally, is there a process to be like, okay, I'm working with a stunt choreographer and I have to remember that they're the choreographer? Like, I'm always interested when people have to like turn off a department.
Yeah, well, it's you know, I'm just... I think in a lot of ways, I'm just a very collaborative person. So when those people come in and they have their talents, I always just welcome it with open arms. And I try and make it the most collaborative experience it can be for them, as well as for myself. And I just find that you get such better results that way. You know, if they had like just this razor sharp vision of what it should be and all of that, then that would be one thing. But usually they're coming in. Like Chad Griffin was the stunt coordinator on both of these two movies that just came out on Netflix. So we got to work on both of those projects together. So Lady Driver was the second film I did with him. And we've got a great rapport coming off of Roped. He's one of those guys who just...
he always gave us even more than we asked for, you know? So that's always just such an amazing thing and such a blessing. And he's obviously such a pro. He just did stuff on John Wick 3. He's actually a really amazing, horseman himself. His entire family, it's been generations. They are like the world champion trick riders. His sons are the top of the game for horse trick riding in the world. So for the rodeo movie, which is Roped, the other one, which is also just a lovely movie, love story, but we had him on there to do all that horse stuff. And it got very tricky on that movie because we had baby cows, kids, falling in rivers with rain towers gone and horseback riding and roping, trying to save the kid who's in the river. And, you know, to having all of those things going on at once, you have to have somebody who's really good to be able to pull that kind of stuff off. So luckily, I'm so honored and lucky to have such amazing teams around me. A lot of times people ask me, what's the trick to directing? What's the key to successfully directing? And it's always the same answer, is surround yourself with a good team. I mean, that's really
right.
Anybody in a manager position or no matter what your job is, if you work at McDonald's or whatever, if you don't have a good team, then you're not going to be successful. You know, it's what it boils down to. And I try my best, and of course I'm not a perfect person by any means, but I try to lead by positivity and empower the teams that I'm working with and make them feel successful. That's my ultimate goal when I'm steering the ship is, and I've been lucky enough to have some fantastic experiences where, we're all harmoniously being creative and having some freedom to be creative because, in truth, it's a very difficult job, as you know. It's incredibly hard to make these things. And if you're not having fun, if you're not having a good time, then it's just that much harder. So I try and make it as an enjoyable experience as it can be.
Well, I love what you're saying about team, open, flow, because I was a production assistant one time on a Alexander Payne movie, and one of the things about him is he's just so, like, by the third day, I had gotten to speak with him for a few minutes, and I was just like, I'm this PA as they pass through town, and he's, like, talking to me and actually listening while I talk. I was just kind of like, this is teamwork. And I was talking to the services guy who this was in Hawaii. It was a crafty truck from Van Nuys. I said, well, they send your truck here through Matson. He says, oh, I travel across the country. And this ties into the collaborative you're saying. He says, I travel, the furthest I've ever driven is Boston. I said, what the hell you drive to Boston for? He said, Ben Affleck hired us for the town. I said, oh, that's cool. And he goes, he's one of the nicest people I've worked with. I said, why? He goes, one time he asked me about an idea he was thinking about for the work that day. I was looking around, talk about, how we live in myth and illusion, right? And, when we're coming up in this business, right? And we think that, just because he's Eastwood, he has all the answers, or, we saw this great film and they just knew everything all day. So I just was pretty astounded because I'm such a huge fan of the town that possibly something I liked was the crafty head guy idea.
Yeah,
so,
what's so interesting is you want to have the ideas and thoughts. And of course, if you're the director, you've got to steer the ship and you're the one who has to make the decision to go with said idea. But I'm never closed off to ideas. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not my way or the highway, because I feel like, when you do that, you're missing the opportunity to make something greater. You talked about, George Lucas earlier, and I think a lot of the success with the early Star Wars films is that George Lucas wasn't George Lucas as we know him today. And you had people like Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford with really strong personalities, that pushed back against some of the ideas that maybe George wanted to go with. And they kind of created this and took the characters and made them take on their own lives. And I think that that kind of collaboration, and ultimately George could have been a stickler and said, no, you have to do it this way, or, give me the take this way, then you can have your take, and then just choose his take. He could have gone that route with those movies, but you can clearly see and you can tell, and there is footage behind the scenes seeing them argue. But I think the argument is a good thing because it creates something even greater or vastly different than maybe what you thought you were going to do. And I think not being afraid of that process and finding these new voices in the mix of the people that you've hired to tell this story, it can create something that's magical. And I'm never closed off to those ideas. And I tell that to my collaborators, whether it's an actor who wants to change some dialogue. I'm one of those guys. Unless we're doing a Shakespeare, period accurate thing, and something like that you're supposed to say the dialogue that exact way, I never care about sticking to it. Like, what makes it real for you? What makes it that you believe in it? Let's go with that. You know what I mean? Because
for sure.
And as long as the point gets across, as long as if there's some big plot piece, of course we have to make sure we get those things in there, and or if it's a callback to another scene. But having that kind of freedom and not being afraid of that collaboration, I think greater things can be born. Another real quick thing on George Lucas and American Graffiti that is maybe a fun fact for people that don't know it about Lady Driver, but we filmed it in the same town. So that's Petaluma.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I caught that. That's where American Graffiti was actually filmed, which I thought was really cool. And I loved, I just love the fact that it's a race car movie and we got to film it in the same town as that. I got a big kick out of that.
Yeah, that's really cool. Cause when the town was mentioned, I thought American Graffiti, and I actually lived in Sacramento, which is that an hour outside Modesto. So I know that it was based on Modesto. So my friend used to say, I used to do that. So American Graffiti to me is like so perfect because this is the street it was based on, but it was shot in Petaluma. So yeah, American Graffiti, gosh, that's just something we talk about anything here, but you're sparking my brain to rewatch it because obviously just
I've got
to use the music and...
I'm going to show my kids because they haven't seen it yet. So that's on my list.
Awesome.
That's the cool thing about having kids is, music and movies and those kinds of things, like stuff you haven't thought about in so long, will all of a sudden a light bulb will go off in your head. And it's because you want to share that with your kids. So I always love that. Like, I'm trying to remember, it was a great movie we watched the other night that they hadn't seen. And it's so awesome because I get to see it again. It's like, I get
to see it again.
I really wanted to see this movie again. It's 20 years. So that's always such a blast. And then as they grow and they obviously get older, then you can show them new things that you couldn't have necessarily shown them. Like, I'm so excited to show them some Ridley Scott movies when eldest is there. She's probably ready. Alien would probably still scare the bejesus out of her, but I think she's about there. You know what I mean? So it's like those fun things. Getting to share
the American Gangster
kind of
yet, though. Don't need to know about Kingpins of Harlem, but one of his best. It's like I cannot pass the icon. People think I'm lying when I say I've seen it 200 times. So I'm just like, no. The day is ruined if American Gangster pops up on my Netflix or Prime. I love that you're mentioning that because something that happened in Lady Driver, and then we'll discuss some of Rope that was really important to me was just for obvious reasons, family drama, whatever. I had an uncle who falls about 14 years older than me, and I met him about 6 years ago, and we just within a weekend together, we became close, like he was there when I was born. And that whole relationship, but then also the reverse of the understanding, the passion of the past, to him, it's like, he's one of those where he'll just be like, he'll ask me, oh, who are you talking to this week? And then he'll be like, what? Like, I watched that movie the other day. Like, you know, and it's not even like a name dropping ego thing. It's just like, to him, it is just, he thinks it's so wild that like, we're talking to somebody who was a cameraman on Molly's Game or the cinematographer.
Right,
and
he's
just
right.
Like, oh my God, I love that. Send me the interview. And I'm just like, dude, just ask me. Like, I love what you're saying, that familial connection of film and the way they mature. Just real brief, because you were talking about showing your children, and I don't have children and don't plan to. So for me, I get to have friends that we can recycle films. And we did a podcast about Forrest Gump, and it was so weird because I always saw that movie as the fun bubblegum popcorn, you know, it was Best Picture, as you know, but
yeah,
that whole Forrest relationship, Jenny, I haven't seen it since I have a best female friend of 20 years. So like every time there was a Jenny scene, I was crying like someone died. It was like when the guy smacked Jenny, I was like, oh my God, I'd go ballistic if somebody hit my best female friend. Or just like when she gets sick, and just, so I was just like, why am I crying at Forrest Gump? Like just,
oh yeah, no, you know,
crying so hard.
You know, it's really funny that you mentioned that. That's one I just showed my girls and they bawled their eyes out. I didn't remember how sad that movie was. And so they had watched Titanic. They really wanted to watch Titanic. Yeah. So I had to like prep them. I'm like, you guys got to be ready, 'cause this is a sad movie. I mean, this might be one of the saddest movies. So they made it through Titanic, and it was sad, and they cried, and they talked about it for like a week straight. But then we watched Forrest Gump, and that might have even been sadder. Like, they cried watching that movie, and I was crying. I was like, I did not remember or think about it that sad. Like, I knew, of course, I remember there's sad stuff in it, for sure, the mom and Jenny and all of that. I totally remember that. But even the bittersweet thing with his kid at the end, and they were just, it was just the alligator tears going on that movie. And I was like, dang it. I thought this was a fun movie we're all going to watch tonight. And
I was the same way the afternoon. I was like, saw it with my best friend. We're going to have fun talking to him. And then I was like, and it was just, there was just that one line, and then I won't harp, but it was like, because I have friends who have been victims of domestic violence. When Forrest says to Jenny by the Lincoln Memorial, after the guy smacks her, when he says, I'd never hurt you, I just like lost it for like 10 minutes, because I just remember thinking like, having females that were in that situation and just being like, you know, we've talked about dating. I understand why we haven't, but like, here's probably the only reason why we should have dated. Like, I would have never beat you.
Right.
You know, so that to me was just like, wait. And like you're saying, Forrest was fun. We laughed. We talked in high school. Then we get older and we discovered the music and thought, oh my God, this music's the best ever. Okay. So with that, Rope, I just got this question the other day from my producer. So you're the first time, that we're going to use it. Roped, never mind that I'm interviewing you, what would you like to say about Roped?
What would I like to say about Roped? Well, I think the thing that is the coolest thing that I could talk about with Roped is that it's a love story, and that's at its core. That's what it's about. It's a love story. It's got a little, you know, people have kind of done the comparisons to Footloose. There's definitely influence from Footloose. It's almost like Footloose and Romeo and Juliet kind of mixed in together there. But what I would say that's so amazing about this film is that we did the auditioning process for the leads. And we went through a lot of people. We tested out a lot of people. When we brought the two together, that ended up being our leads, which is Lauren York, now Lauren Swickard, and Josh Swickard, there was something about their chemistry. And I just get such a kick out of how this whole thing worked out. But they shared their first kiss on screen for the movie, and flash forward, they're married, and they're totally in love in real life. And I think their love story unfolded on screen for real. And it wasn't just like, oh, you know, it's this Hollywood thing. It was a very sweet thing. It was not, you know, going out and partying or something like that. It was this very sweet, very innocent thing. They're both adorable people and human beings in real life. Couldn't be sweeter. And they found each other. And it was just such a happy thing. And I think that more than anything about this movie shines through is we literally filmed them falling in love. You know what I mean? Which is just so cool. And
what a thing for their kids that one day if that happened.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it was,
that is just honored. I mean, we don't even want to see our parents' kids, right? But, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry. I just had to say that. Like the fact
that
there's,
I think that's, that's it, you know, and again, same team. So I love the team, the crew, from production design, through makeup and through costume. Everybody was so amazing. Tad Griffin, again, the stunt coordinator with all the horses. I mean, we even have a horse, race a truck in this movie, and you can imagine all the dangers and all the things from a technical standpoint that would happen with doing that. You know, having him there, he was able to, we wouldn't have been able to do it without Tad. I mean, that's just the honest truth, because he understands horses so much and understands, and also they've been trained to be around vehicles and having that proximity between, I don't know if you remember, but the truck kind of zooms in at the horse and they kind of ride side by side together at one point.
That's a dangerous thing to do.
And, you know, you never know how the horse is going to react, but of course, with such amazing, talented people, the stunt double on that horse, Tad himself drove the truck for that sequence because he can understand the spatial distancing and, you know, those kind of, this is where the scientist part starts coming out. You know, that's when I get into that scientist room, because you want to make sure everybody's safe. Because I come from an action background, I have done stunts myself. I have stunt coordinated a bunch of projects. Safety to me is the number one thing, you know, and it's, to me, there's no reason why, yes, you put a stunt double in there to protect the actor, but that doesn't mean we want to hurt the stunt doubles either, because we need them for the next day, you know, and just purely from a filmmaking perspective, you need them to stay healthy and all of that. So it's one of those things where I guarantee we wouldn't have been able to shoot it the way we did and or get the pieces we got if we didn't have somebody like him there with that knowledge and that expertise and able to do all of that. So, you know, I think this movie is a lot of fun, and I love, again, the entire cast. Now we have Casper Van Dien playing the father in this role, and he's a very kind of, you know, I don't know if he's a bad guy in any way, you know, shape or means. I think maybe he's slightly overzealous, and misguided a little bit. You know, I always like trying to tell, you know, two sides to every story, because I believe there's truth on both. I don't think it's ever one sided. It's never one extreme or the other. So there's always that gray area. And I think finding that harmony and that compromise between the two sides is always, you have to be able to do that. And I think in our current climate in the U.S., we're faced with such a polarizing thing. Everything is so one side or the other. And, you know, I hope there's a way for us to find common ground. But it seems that both sides just keep going more extreme. And then it's like, well, nothing will ever get fixed that way. You know, yes, compromise can suck.
Nothing does. And without dialogue or listening, right?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that sometimes you have to compromise to build these bridges to move forward in a positive way. But so we try to make that come through in the storytelling in this movie as well. And, but we have great cast, you know, got Casper there. Christina Moore again is in it. And Lauren York is her stage name, but Lauren Swickard in Everyday Life, and Josh Swickard are the leads. And then we have people like Shane Graham, who plays Hank, and I absolutely adore him in this role. I always love working with Shane. I've also had the honor of casting him in multiple projects before. And I thought he brought a really nice comedy and levity to this movie. I love every scene. He's actually my kids' favorite too in this movie. They love Hank. To John Schneider, which is, man, he is a legend. Love working with him. And Michael Rourke, who also has a movie out right now called Bennett's War that launched the same weekend on Netflix. He's really plays a great part in it. Who else? I'm missing some people than I am. The entire cast was Spencer Neville. He plays the boyfriend in there. And, you know, even though he doesn't have a ton of screen time, I think what he does with it's really great. I also think that kid's a star. I think he needs some more lead roles as well. You get to work with these kind of people. It makes the job so enjoyable, you know.
That's fantastic. And again, everyone, check out Roped on Netflix. We've come down to our last 5 minutes or so, where we have these questions that we ask every guest, and they've been adjusted over. And yes, it is a blatant robbery from inside the Actors Studio, but. Okay. And it's not the same questions, but we've generated them based on questions guests have liked or not liked. So first one is genre, and never mind the story works, you have cast, budget, etc. What's the genre you would love to do before it's metaphorical retirement time?
Oh my gosh. It's tough to nail down just one, but I think I've gotten to do some science fiction recently, so I probably would have said that, but because I've gotten to dip my toes in there, and I definitely want to do more, I would say fantasy and or like medieval. I really want to do a project set either in medieval or, you know, maybe a Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings, something that lives in that universe would really be a dream come true for me. I'm a big fan of Lord of the Rings, I was definitely on board with the whole Game of Thrones thing. I was watching every week for the entire time. So I think something in that universe would be pretty awesome.
Interesting. You know, the 99% of the time people say science fiction, but that always interests me. Okay, so you have a genre takeout that you have kids, so they have to eat. Just you, Sean, the filmmaker, haven't eaten for a week. You're back to, you're trying to find a job. No dough, nothing, but you absolutely would not ever under any circumstance make this genre.
Oh man, I wouldn't make this a genre. I wouldn't do it. That's the question. Oh yeah, I can say. I'm not a big fan of I don't even know what the genre name is. But basically, like taking a real life tragedy and exploiting it, like. Even if it's a murderer, like I'm just not, that's not for me. I'm not saying they can't be good movies and that there isn't amazing directors and storytellers and actors that participate in them. And I would even maybe watch it, but I just don't want to be a part of like glorifying a serial killer or somebody, something in that.
Oh,
thing.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, there's some great ones on Netflix. But yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
It's just not for me necessarily wanting to do. I don't want to make I don't want to make somebody who ruined a bunch of people's lives look sexy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just like, I don't want to go there. I don't want to do that. A fictional, if you want to make up this crazy serial killer, I'm on board. I like making horror films, all of that stuff. I'm totally down. You know, like, I've got a current script right now that lives in that kind of Saw universe. I like that kind of stuff. That's totally cool. They're a lot of fun to make. It's a great Halloween time type of movie. That kind of stuff, totally down. But if it's something that, you know, at least I would say not far enough removed, like World War II, making something about Hitler, fine. You know what I mean? Let's show the good guys go in there and battle them and all that. But something that's maybe more recent, where there's still family that is still affected by that kind of thing. Like, I don't want to bring up that pain for them if I don't have to.
What a perfect way of saying it. That is so, oh my gosh, I love that. Let's see. Now, the last two questions, let's see. And basically, I would just love to know what comes to your brain. You could just say the department. So, gosh, I feel so bad when I tell guests that we have 4 minutes left. I just want to talk for the next 2 hours unless you say shut up. All right. So if you could do any department you haven't done, department head, not PA in it, what would be a department you would love to do?
Oh, I've almost done every department. Again, I also grew up in the theater, so I grew up building stages and all that stuff. But probably props. Probably props. I love making props. I love doing stuff with my hands. At home, I tinker on motorcycles and I do fabrication and I, you know, light engine work. I'm not like an engine expert, but I like making things. So, yeah, that's probably, and I have done it. I've jumped in there and worked on props, not prop master, but I've been in the department. On Salvage Marines, the sci-fi project that I mentioned before, also starring Casper Van Dien. I jumped in there and was right in there helping fabricate costumes, painting them, you know, that whole night into the depths of the night. We were making costumes before.
Which is so, that, you know what, the world's become a filmmaker's life. You don't know what day or time is. We should get a little commercial together and say, now you know, stop telling us we're lazy and we needed to get 3 other jobs. And the last question would be, and it's not like the genre question. This could just be like, whatever, you're just, someone asks you to do it. What would be a department head that, like, you would not want to be? Like, you just would not want to give 3 months of being on set that.
There's two that are equal. Line producer and first AD. Those two jobs are the toughest. They're the toughest job. Really, a lot of people know being the director is the toughest. Oh, it's so hard. I've tried to do first AD. I've actually done first AD, and I'm like, it's just, to me, it's like almost thankless. You know what I mean? Like, they don't get the praise they deserve. And line producer is just, I think it's the toughest job. I mean, it is the toughest job. And basically, you have to say no to people on a bunch of things, and so everybody hates you. It's also a thankless job. You know what I mean? It's just, I 100% honor the people that kick ass in those jobs and that thrive on those jobs, because that's just, to me, they're really, really difficult. And I have the utmost respect for the people that do those. Like a good friend of mine, Noel Vega, is a fantastic line producer. He's also an amazing stunt coordinator and producer. But he also just happens to be really good at line producing. I don't think he loves line producing, but he's just really creative. He makes the dollar stretch. He gets you things that you need. Like, he got me a techno crane on that World War II shoot while we're filming on an aircraft carrier. And I was like, I have no idea how he was able to pull all that off. And because, again, we had limited resources. But you know, so I just have the utmost respect when people are really good at that. And same thing on these movies. We have great line producers, or else there's no way we'd be able to pull off what we do on the budgets that we're at. You know what I mean? They make, they're miracle workers. So I bow down. I bow down in respect.
Oh, and especially first ADs, that is the dreaded job. So with that, everyone, Google what a first AD does, and you'll know why it's... honestly, I don't know how anyone is a first AD. I mean, even the most detail-oriented...
Okay, let me shout out my two first ADs that I work with the most, Daniel Aspromonte and Marco Barcalini. They both are both Italian, very interesting. Interestingly enough, and that was not by design, just randomly when I came on board with ESX and Forest Films, Daniel was the first AD that they've worked with, and we met and really got along, and so that worked out. And then Marco is somebody that I've actually hired, and I interviewed him several years back and loved his personality, and so hired him for a job, and then I keep coming back and trying to get him whenever he's available. But of course, both these guys are very busy, so you can't always work with the same people. But those two guys, unsung heroes, love them to death.
Oh, excellent. Well, thank you for shouting them out. And I love any first AD that makes movies happen, because, yeah, we both know they're almost all that makes movies happen. So thank you so much for joining us today, Sean. Again, everyone, check out Lady Driver and Roped on Netflix. And have a great day, Sean. Take care, and all of our best wishes and safety to you and yours.
Thank you so much. Right back at you. And I really appreciate you having me, and I look forward to the next time. Aloha. Mahalo.
Oh, I like that. Sean threw in a mahalo. For those of you that don't know, that means thank you in Hawaii. I love that. Mahalo. Yes, mahalo. With that, big mahalo from me. That's going to wrap it up. You know what the deal is? Whether it's morning, afternoon, or evening, make sure to watch a good movie. Aloha.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, real conversation and movie-induced inspiration.